Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. Glad you could be with us today. We are now 2 years into the pandemic, and making decisions about meals is one of the many things that's become more complicated. Grocery stores are struggling with supply chain issues. Restaurants are open, but depending on staffing and Omicron surges, they're sometimes limited in what they offer and when they're open. But each day, your family is still asking, what's for dinner? Well, we are here to help you out today. Getting it done in the kitchen doesn't have to be difficult or boring, even if you do it 3 times a day every day. Did you get an air fryer for Christmas? Have you heard that mushrooms are the ingredient of 2022? This hour, we're talking about both of those things and much more with our guests, who I will introduce right now. We have with us food writer and cultural anthropologist Kelly Alexander. She's a professor of food studies in the Department of American Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Good morning to you, Kelly.
Good morning, Angela. How are you?
I'm well. I'm looking forward to getting some advice, Kelly. I have to talk to you about all of this. And also, we have with us on the line James Rohn. James is the program manager for the Project Success Cooking Institute in Minneapolis. Hi, James.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going well. And we want to hear from our listeners, too, this hour. Have you been doing the cooking during the pandemic? Are you tired of it? Are you looking for some new ideas, some new recipes? Do you have a teenager who doesn't cook, but certainly could? Want to know how to inspire them to get into the kitchen and make a meal? That's what we're talking about. You can call us at 651-227-6000. Again, that number is 651-227-6000 or call 800-242-2828. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis NPR. So Kelly, first, a personal question. How's it going for you in the kitchen during this very long pandemic?
It has been a pretty interesting time to be somebody who works in the world of food for a living during this time when we've all been driven inside for really, really long periods of time. I am often the sounding board for friends and family and even my students who say, what am I going to do? I have no idea what to make for dinner. And of course, I've been thinking about this question for most of my entire career. So it's been busy, surprisingly busy time for me.
And, you know, you're someone, do you enjoy cooking?
So I love to cook, but I'm also the same as everybody else. I experience that kind of fatigue that comes with dinner on a busy weeknight and just the like ceaseless need to figure out what to cook for dinner every night that we all do. Being a food professional doesn't really take any of that away. And in fact, sometimes I think it complicates it because I feel like I can't give myself a pass and just get takeout like everybody else. Mm-hmm. Like I have to keep trying. But I have had some breakthroughs in giving myself a break and in finding ways that I could keep it fun for me. Because one thing I became worried about, and I think about for people who love to cook and have been stuck in their kitchens for so long, is how can we still make it fun for ourselves? How can we still find that proverbial joy of cooking when we're doing so much more of it and keep it from becoming a chore? So I think about that a lot.
Yeah, I do too, because that's me. I mean, I enjoy cooking. I find it relaxing. It brings me joy, but it has become, you know, a chore because like with so many other things, I feel like I'm experiencing that decision fatigue and yeah. It's almost like a sense of loss because this is something that I used to really enjoy.
Right. And so you're used to the kitchen being your happy place. And then when you're just stuck in it, kind of it becomes drudgery. So I think about this a lot is how, and I talk about it with my students, how can we keep it so that it's still a place where we find that kind of joy and peace. And the kinds of solutions that I've come up with actually aren't always about cooking at all. Sometimes I've gotten really into making theme nights, and the theme nights don't have anything to do with food. Everybody has to wear a hat for dinner. Everybody has to come to dinner with something funny to tell me, and whoever makes everybody laugh the hardest can have the biggest dessert or whatever. You know, all of that stuff is just made it a little bit more fun for me as the cook. Forget about the people I'm eating with. I'm looking to make it fun for me. And then I figure if it's fun for me, that will kind of spread out. So that's some of the stuff I've been doing.
And James, how about you? How is your home cooking going these days or for the past 2 years?
It's going well. I feel like because I teach cooking now to teenagers, my personal home menu has really expanded. So I have not yet gotten to the point of fatigue, because it feels like I'm always finding out about new things to cook that I never really thought about when I was younger. So, and for me, cooking is an act of self-expression as well. And that's something that, as a self-defined educator and artist, I really value. I love that I can go in the kitchen and express myself. I don't know if everybody who shares the meals with me feels that way, if I express myself possibly in a way that they don't enjoy as much, but I don't know. Yeah, for me, the kitchen is still a place of refuge and self-expression, so I'm grateful for that.
You know, you use that phrase, I teach cooking to teenagers, and some would believe, you know, that teenagers don't want to learn how to cook. Have you found that to be not the case at all?
Yeah, that's not the case for us. We're pretty lucky, actually, because most of the students who show up at our program have already made the decision that they do want to learn how to cook. There are sometimes students who are reluctant to try a kind of food that they haven't had before, but I find that when they're engaged in preparing it, they're more willing to take risks in what they'll actually taste.
Mm, I'm happy to hear that. And we're going to talk a lot more about the work that you all are doing there at Project Success with the Cooking Institute. But first, I want to talk about food a little more generally here, because Kelly, I have to ask you, how do you feel about the New York Times calling mushrooms the ingredient of 2022? Mushrooms is like the new it food?
I think it's a really cool decision. The woman who wrote that, Kim Severson, is a fantastic reporter. Shout out to Kim. She's somebody I know pretty well. And here's the thing. Mushrooms are hardly trendy when you think about the large scope of history and the fact that, by the way, if anybody is interested in mushrooms, there's a fantastic documentary that is called, in fact, Fantastic Fungi.
What's it on? How do I find the documentary, Fantastic
Fungi? It has its own website. I am not sure what platforms it's on. I think it's pretty easy to stream and is about $3 to rent. It tells you, I love it. I love mycology and the study of mushrooms. And in it, you learn that, you know, mushrooms came before all of humanity. They were on this earth growing, and they're going to outlive us, and that mushrooms can tell us amazing stories about the earth and the world. But one thing I would not really call them is trendy, because they grow in the dirt. They're among the most humble ingredients that we could possibly think of. They're mostly water. They're just the earthiest. I mean, I keep coming back to the word. There's an incredible variety of mushrooms, but what they share is this deeply flavorful kind of richness that has something in common with the dirt in which they're grown. Now, obviously, we have some mushrooms in the world that are incredibly valuable. Maitake mushrooms, truffles, of course, are among the most expensive ingredients in the world. But most of the mushrooms we encounter are pretty cheap and easy to find. And not only that, but they're also controversial. I know people who are mushroom haters, they don't like the texture. But if you are a mushroom lover, which I have always been, finding them on a trend list is interesting. And I'll tell you what I like about it. There's something so elemental about mushrooms that calling them trendy is like reminding us about the value of home cooking and of the really simple ingredients that we might take for granted. So to me, calling out mushrooms as a trend is kind of about rediscovering something that we may overlook all the time. Like we go to the grocery store and we may or may not grab some mushrooms. We may or may not let them languish in the back of our fridge, and saying, hey, you should pay more attention to these really delicious foods that are really accessible, that can add some like really nice richness and depth to almost anything you're cooking. It's kind of a nice idea. I think it's encouraging. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Mm-hmm. And would you have chosen something else as like the top ingredient for 2022?
I've done a project with my students this year where we kept a record of one meal we ate every week for the entire semester. And we took pictures of the meals. We wrote about the decisions that we made when we made them, who we cooked for, if we ate them by ourselves, if we used a recipe or not. And I have to tell you, I was totally overwhelmed by the amount of chicken my college students were eating. Unbelievable amounts of chicken.
Chicken wings or what part of the chicken?
Mostly wings when they could get them, but the wings have been an issue with supply chain. So mm-hmm. wings, super popular. Chicken breasts. I had a student who was like, I've discovered chicken thighs, which I thought was cute, but also hilarious because, you know, the chicken, it's really hard to discover a chicken thigh. They've been around for a really long time. They're unpopular. They're unpopular for most American eaters. We like chicken breasts a lot better. It's like a white meat, dark meat thing. Other cultures, French people love chicken thighs, but they're a great thing if you're into the discovery market to discover because they're far less expensive with the supply chain. You can get thighs mm-hmm. much more easily than you can get breasts and wings now. So mm-hmm. if you're a dark meat person, you already know about chicken thighs. But I would have made chicken the ingredient of the year. I just, the amount, yeah. you know, and especially it coalesced bizarrely around midterms when students were really not eating a lot of takeout and cooking for themselves. So much chicken cooking and eating.
Yeah, I'm with you. What do you have to say? What can you add to this, James, this discussion of chicken? Should that be the food of the year or?
I'm a big chicken fan. I have to say, first of all, chicken thighs all day. Like all day.
way more
flavorful, way cheaper. I'm a chicken thigh fan. I also have another mushroom movie recommendation. I don't know if y'all have seen The Truffle Hunters.
Okay.
It's amazing. It's this documentary that was made about folks who dedicate their lives to finding truffles. And I would also recommend it for people who love dogs because one thing you may know is that a lot of folks use dogs to sniff out the truffles. And these truffle dogs are the most lovable creatures on God green earth. I mean, they are amazing. So I really recommend that movie. It's beautiful.
And one more note about the chicken thigh. That's dark meat, correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking about chicken thighs, but we're also just talking about cooking more broadly. And we want to hear from you. What have you been the person who's done most of the cooking in your home during the pandemic? And how are you doing? Are you tired of cooking? Are you looking for some way to reignite your passion for cooking? Need some new ideas, some new recipes? Or do you have children or teenagers in your home who you would like to teach them how to cook or get them involved in helping out? Want to know how to inspire them. Also, are you working with any new kitchen gadgets? Tell us about those. The phone lines are open. The number is 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828 in New Brighton. Let's talk to, is it Andrea or Andrea?
It is Andrea.
Andrea, good morning. Andrea, New Brighton. Morning. What's going on in your kitchen?
Well, I recently became a stay-at-home mom over the pandemic, and my husband and I have loosely meal planned, but it became more intensified over the pandemic to help with our sanity, help with our kids, and just be a little bit more efficient in the evenings, especially with dinner. And I'm actually sitting in the grocery store parking lot right now. I just meal planned, but it was a little clunky at first, mm-hmm. considering we were only going to the grocery store, you know, very infrequent initially mm-hmm. when the pandemic started.
Right.
So it's kind of important to plan. We use this app. It's the only app we buy. It's called AnyList, A-N-Y List. Mm-hmm. And it's really helpful. We can have recipes. We can meal plan for the calendar. We can do grocery lists, everything import. It's really easy and helpful. And that's been great for us. And I just want to say, I actually, speaking of mushrooms, it's one of my favorite things. And I have some mushroom barley soup that I'm going to be making in the crock pot this week. So
go ahead, Andrea.
I've been a mushroom fan since I was little. It's the best topping for pizza. So I'm all about the mushroom. But that's been really helpful for us, just meal planning. And it was hard at first. And it's weird to think, gosh, it's Sunday. What are we going to have for dinner on Thursday? But
so you plan for the whole week at one time?
Yes, at least. Sometimes up to 10 days, especially when we were only going to the grocery store infrequently when this first started.
And how many
in March of 2020.
How many people are in your household?
There are four of us, two kids and two adults.
Wow. Well, thank you for your recommendations, meal planning and the AnyList app. Anything you want to say to what Andrea is doing there, James?
Yeah, sure. Another app I'd recommend is called MealLime, M-E-A-L-I-M-E. Uh-huh. It's actually one of the sources of recipes that we use often at the Project Success Institute cooking program. One of the things I really like about that app is that it helps you over time to sort of build your pantry. And so that way, when you are trying to meal plan rather than having to buy, you know, 16 ingredients for a recipe or something like that, you're just buying a couple of things that you then supplement with staples. Staple cooking is another sort of focus for us at the Institute.
Staple cooking, what does that mean?
Well, I suppose it means the examination of the things that we keep around. So the foods that we can store so that we can prepare meals more readily. One of the goals that we have at the Institute is that students develop a sense of self-sufficiency. So we want them to be able to walk into a kitchen and, independent of a recipe, be able to select ingredients that balance well together. Mm-hmm. But we also talk about comparison and contrast of pantries around the world. So some of the things that Midwestern American white cooks might think of as being staples are not necessarily staples in other parts of the world. And if we can be inspired by and draw from the staples that other cultures are cooking with, cultures that are represented by students in our class, then we can all learn from each other.
James, I want to take a step back. You're here in the Twin Cities, but for people who are not familiar with Project Success, tell us about the work that you all do with Minneapolis students.
Sure. So Project Success is a youth development nonprofit. We're based in Minneapolis, and we just turned 28 years old the other day.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I also turned 43, but I don't look as good as Project Success.
Congratulations on that, too.
Thank you very much. We work to motivate and inspire students to dream about their futures, to help them to create a plan to get there, and to give them the tools and the support they need to achieve their goals. So we started at North High in Minneapolis with 200 kids back in 94. And now we partner with Minneapolis Public Schools to serve more than 15,000 students every year. And the core of the program is a set of workshops that are led by Project Success facilitators in the English classrooms of 6th to 12th graders once a month, every month until they graduate. But there's a constellation of other programs that Project Success provides that surround that core programming. And so that includes theater experiences, college tours, outdoor expeditions, and the Project Success Institute, which is my involvement with Project Success. So we started the Institute back in 2017. We're based in a multi-purpose classroom that is at our headquarters just across the street from the Sculpture Gardens, for those of you who are listening from Minneapolis. Life skills, yeah.
So how does, and I can see this, but explain how the Cooking Institute, how does that fit into this mission of helping young people be excited about their futures and preparing them for it?
Yeah, so at the Institute, we offer bike tech lab certificates. We offer personal finance and coding and cooking. And the reason why we do these things is not just to prepare students to have the skills that they'll need to be independent adults, but it's also because we believe that providing students with a welcoming invitation into something that they've never done before doesn't just give them an opportunity to connect to a purpose that they'll engage in. Sometimes it even helps them to understand what they're not interested in, which means that they can make better choices about what they want to do next in their lives.
And I think I read that, you know, in the beginning, the types of foods you were cooking were, you know, it wasn't very wide ranging. So how did that begin to change, or how did you broaden it to include foods from around the world?
Yeah. So one of the things I love about the Institute is that we provide transportation to and from the space. So one time I was giving a ride home from a student or for a student whose family is originally from Ecuador. I asked her what she thought of the food that we prepared that night. And I asked her whether it was the sort of thing that they usually prepared at home. And she said, oh, no. And she started to tell me about some of the foods that they often had at home. And I said, oh, well, great. Would you like to share one of those with us? And she said, no, because she's a teenager and that's putting her right on the spot and asking her to be the representative of entire culture. And so I was like, okay, all right, that's fine. But I didn't want to miss out on the opportunity of expanding the palate of our class. So I decided I would look up one of the recipes that she had described. I'd attempt to facilitate the recipe, and then she could just serve as the critic. So she could tell us how we were doing it wrong.
Nice.
And so, yeah, so the next week we made mote pio, which is a Ecuadorian dish, and she told us exactly what we were doing wrong. But she was also really thrilled that we'd taken that chance. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the trimester, when we asked our students who represent, I mean, those of us who have gotten to experience Minneapolis public schools know what a wealth, what an incredible privilege we have, because we have students from all over the world and who represent so many different perspectives in our district. And our cooking class reflects that. So at the end of the class, we said, what do you want to cook next trimester? And now they were giving us, finally, after they had seen what we would be willing to cook in the class, they started to give us all these dishes that we hadn't considered before. And now that's what makes up our menu at the cooking certificate.
So I love it.
Now we, yeah, it's really fun.
We're talking about cooking and how do we bring back our passion for it if it's become a chore for you? And how do we get more people in our households also engaged in cooking? If you are the person who makes all the meals in your house, the number is 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Tell us what's going on in your kitchen and if you have any suggestions for the rest of us. In White Bear Lake, we've got Kyle on the phone. Hi, Kyle.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us?
Yeah, so I'm a stay-at-home dad. I do all the cooking. And typically we try to get like everything in bulk as much as we can. Mm-hmm. But my wife can't have dairy or gluten, so sometimes we have to supplement with like the grocery store. And it got to be just a lot to plan for, with timing and money too. It's more expensive for groceries. So we thought we'd try like a food subscription plan. Mm-hmm. So we did that a couple weeks ago, and it's just been so helpful. So they send you everything you need, and then we have like five dinners, so I can just cook everything in about like 10, 15 minutes, and we can have like a sit down meal, and it works out really great.
And how many, you have kids in your home. How many kids do you have there you're cooking for?
We just have one 9-month-old, so we're kind of doing the weaning with him. So, like, on top of having to do the cooking, you know, preparing all of his food, we try to, like, eat the food that I'm preparing for him, but, like, logistically, it just doesn't always work out. So, trying to, like, juggle all the dietary needs and the foods can be a bit much.
So, it does a lot of pressure in being the person that plans the meal. Have you found that to be the case, Kyle?
Yeah, because I do a lot of cooking, and then, you know, not being able to use gluten or dairy mm-hmm. can sometimes be limiting.
Right.
And it's totally fine, but it is more expensive because you can't necessarily buy those things in bulk.
Right.
And then, you know, flavor-wise, it's just hard to do a lot of different things that I'd like to do. So with the mm-hmm. food subscription, you know, everything with this one is gluten and dairy-free. So we can get like a really nice variety mm-hmm. with that.
Thank you. That's Kyle in White Bear Lake. And Kelly, what can you tell us about the food subscription services and these food delivery plans a lot of people have turned to in the last 2 years?
Yeah, I think they're pretty good. I think for somebody like our caller, it's probably ingenious. If you're dealing with the double whammy of no dairy and no gluten, I just want you to imagine that. So what you basically have to be is like a vegan who can still eat meat. So it's really, that's a double whammy of tough things to deal with. And those kinds of solutions, those meal services can be great. I often find personally that they come with a lot of boxes and things I don't love, a lot of extra packaging, and that they they take just about as long as it takes to make something from scratch yourself. So if you are not dealing with that particularity, I think you can learn more without them, although I don't put them down. What I will say is your previous caller talking about meal prepping was really interesting to me because, you know, there's never been a more interesting time in history to learn how to cook. We have YouTube, we have TikTok, and my students all are super inspired by those things. I'm sure James sees something similar, and I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. Anything that brings people more into the kitchen, great. If you're inspired by a TikTok video to go make cloud bread, who knows what you'll make after that? So go
wait
for
a minute,
it.
Wait a minute. They're cooking on TikTok?
Oh my gosh. They're cooking so many cool and interesting and sometimes weird and pointless things, but sometimes great things on TikTok. My students email me videos all of the time of their favorite TikTok cooking videos and say, what do you think of this? And sometimes I think they're great, and sometimes I think they're very strange, but I think they're inspiring.
Right.
I think they inspire young people to get in the kitchen and try something. And then once you're there, you realize how fun that can be. So it's like a kind of quote unquote gateway drug for cooking. I think TikTok is great. And meal prepping, you know, it's funny to me that meal prepping is a thing now. We call it meal prepping, but it's what my grandmother would have called leftovers, right? Like if anybody has a grandmother
who could... Here's the L word. We're not supposed to say leftovers.
Right? If you had a grandmother who knew how to make four meals out of one roasted chicken, then you know what meal prepping is already, right? It's super smart. If you want to watch videos of people on YouTube tell you about all of these ingenious things that, you know, housewives have been doing since literally the 1800s, you should go for it. It's very inspiring and smart.
So, you know, getting back to leftovers, like why is that, you know, why did that become like something that's not, you know, necessarily exciting? I mean, if the meal was good the first time, what's wrong with the leftover?
Yeah, leftovers get a really bad name. And so what meal prepping is really great for is reframing them and repackaging them in this other way, right? People don't want to, you know, the I don't like to eat anything twice attitude. I hear that. But if you are meal prepping, you should know that you are eating leftovers. You're eating a meal that you have already made and enjoyed, right?
And James, what can you, I mean, you're working with high school students. What's going on with TikTok that is inspiring kids to be more interested in cooking?
Well, I think what I like the most about TikTok and Instagram as cooking instructional devices is how visual they are. Mm-hmm. I love that it's, we've probably seen them before, like it's a still camera. It's probably somebody's phone that's positioned over the top of a cooking surface. And very quickly, they show how people are adding and cooking the ingredients. I think that sometimes new cooks, whether they're younger or older, are intimidated if they hear a term that they haven't used before, even if it's just a term like saute. If they don't know that sauteing is just moving food around on a hot surface, then they might think that it's too hard for them. I mean, it's French, so maybe they're intimidated by the language thing. I don't know.
You broke it down. You broke saute down.
Yeah. So I love that. For me, that's one of the ways that social media has become a more healthy thing for me is I just mute everything that's not like cooking and skateboarding, and the world is a happy place on Instagram. You know?
All right. Let's take more phone calls as we talk about cooking and how to get more inspired to get back in the kitchen and continue to make meals in Mankato. Let's talk to Steve. Steve, what's going on in your kitchen?
Well, there's a lot of different things going on. I've got a couple of grandchildren living with me now, and my daughter has moved back in. And one of the suggestions that I would make to people is I, several times a year, go hit up the local thrift stores in search of cookbooks because they have all kinds of different ethnic and regional cookbooks, the old church cookbooks that... Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of them use cream of mushroom soup. But, I mean, there's other good recipes.
That's cool now. Steve, the cream of mushroom soup is back. That's very cool right now.
Well, to a certain extent, yes. The other thing is I go searching for co-ops in the area and try some new spices.
Spices. What can you tell us? So what spices are you discovering?
Oh, I do. I get on a kick of different ethnics. And fenugreek is my... latest one that I'm, it's a little harder to use, but.
What is it again? What's the name of it again?
Fenugreek.
Okay. And what is that like? I don't know that.
It's a hard seed that is used in Indian cooking a lot.
Ah, okay. And how old are your grandchildren who moved into your home?
2 and 5.
Oh, they're little ones. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
They're very adventurous. They eat just about everything I put in front of them.
Aw. That's Steve in Mankato. Spices. So a lot we can do with spices, right, Kelly?
Well, it's the easiest way to really up your game as a cook is to experiment with some new herbs and spices and see what you can come up with. It's a really fun idea. I love what he said about going to thrift stores for cookbooks. You know, since I've been in this business for a long time and since the moment I started, I heard that cookbooks were dying, that people were finding recipes on the internet and do we need cookbooks anymore? And I'm here to tell you that like it's one of the brightest areas of all of book publishing. Cookbook publishing is absolutely thriving. Our appetite for them has only increased. It's really amazing. So there's a lot of value that people still have to being able to hold a recipe manual, even if you're still going to the internet for most of your recipes. I find that totally fascinating, is that people still have a big appetite for wanting to at least look at cookbooks and learn from them, that they're growing, that there are more cookbooks being published last year than ever. Huge surge. So I think that's encouraging.
And Steve, who, you know, is a grandpa, I mean, I can see him sitting, you know, with his 5-year-old and 2-year-old grandkids, like flipping through the pages. Like it's a way to spend time together as well.
I'm sure that a lot of people can relate to learning to cook from a grandparent. That's exactly as I learned to cook. I learned to cook. Exactly. And so what if you don't have that experience now? The internet is actually amazing. I totally agree with what James was saying about TikTok. There's something for me about watching the speed with which those recipes are made that makes me feel like I'm, you know, like acquiring some ADHD I didn't already have when I watch it. It moves so fast. On the other hand, if you can't do it by the knee of your grandmother as I did, it's a perfectly good way to learn. You can watch something and see it and then try it yourself. I think sometimes it's discouraging because if you're watching a professional do that, you think it's going to turn out that way in your own kitchen. And of course, as we who cook know, it takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of practice to get something to turn out to be delicious. So mostly what I try to encourage my students to do is to keep going. You know, sometimes your disasters can be really funny and hilarious and they're all great learning experiences. And that's what you learn from that grandparent, right?
All right, let's go back to the phone lines in Bloomington. We've got Alfred on the phone. Alfred, thanks for waiting. What's happening in your kitchen?
I never did any cooking until I was in my 80s.
Oh, my.
I became a caretaker for my wife, so I had to cook, and I found out that I really enjoyed it. I'm now 94. I do my own cooking. My wife has passed away, and I still do my own cooking. I still meet out unless there's some special occasion, but I do enjoy cooking.
So, Alfred, what do you enjoy making? What are your go-to dishes?
Well, breakfast now, and I don't do this regularly, but it's kind of a complicated thing. Where I would take some kale, chop it up, and then put some pepperoncini and onions mixed on it on toast, and then I put some. This is complicated. I put a lot of things into this, and then I top it off with bacon, turkey bacon, and egg.
Oh, wow. So
you've gotten
very creative. And again, what is it that you enjoy about cooking? Is it that you can be creative and just throw in things that you like to eat?
I found out that it's a very creative kind of occupation. You can take recipes and you get some ideas, and then you can modify them, make them the way you want to. I heard you talking about chicken thighs. I'm a big chicken thigh person.
Yeah, you prefer the dark meat.
One thing that, of course, I end up doing, I freeze a lot of things because I'm by myself now, so. You know, I don't need a lot of food, but I like to sometimes cook a bunch of food. For example, I'll get about 12 pounds of chicken thighs, and I got a kind of a paste that I use for baking those, and then I pull them, and then I put them into the freezer, and I've got a...
It's ready to go.
Vacuum kind of sealer now, so that I don't get a lot of burning from staying in the freezer for a long period of time. I can keep them there for a long time.
Well, thank you, Alfred. You've given us a lot of ideas there. So, you know, Alfred started cooking in his 80s when he became the caregiver for his wife. And now he, you know, he's got a thing that will help him store his food to create that vacuum wrap.
Totally amazing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I often like to remind my students that Julia Child didn't start cooking till 40. So if you think you're not a good cook, you can change that. But but starting at 80, I mean, right on.
And so let's... Yeah. Oh, go ahead, James.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, first of all, I'm glad that Alfred is a man of class and distinction because he's on Team Chicken Thigh.
Yes, he's Team Chicken Thigh.
But I also just want to say, I want to shout out that dish that he was describing. That breakfast dish sounds amazing. And part of the reason why it sounds so amazing to me is it's so balanced. It sounds like he's got something from every flavor profile going on in that dish. And I wish we had had time to hear the entire recipe because that sounded amazing.
So James, you know what it is? It's a hash. While he was describing it, that's what occurred to me. And so, you know, you can make a hash with just about anything, right? You can include bits of vegetables, little bits of meat, some potatoes, and put an egg on top, and you have made an awesome breakfast, lunch, or dinner for yourself. And once you get good at that, and you get a great education in what flavors go well together, right?
And Kelly, I have in my notes that you have two teenagers at home and that you've put them in charge of breakfast. So what are they making for breakfast and how is that going?
I have been really inspired by a book called Braided, A Journey of 1,000 Challahs. And it's written by a physician, a women's wellness expert named Dr. Beth Ricinati. I recommend this book. And she writes about how in her practice as a physician, she realized that she was so stressed out all the time. She was just charting and talking to patients, and she has three kids. So she started baking a challah every week, challah, the traditional braided Jewish bread, to slow herself down. And how amazing it was. She made one every week religiously, so to speak, every Friday for her family. But mostly she did it for her wellness. And I had these teenagers I was stuck with in quarantine. And I looked at my younger son and said, you're going to make banana bread every week for you and your brother for breakfast. And you're going to get good at it. And you're going to learn how to do it. You can try any recipe you want. I'll buy whatever ingredients you want. But this is how you will be contributing to the household every week. And he has, in fact, made a banana bread every week for 18 months. He's gotten really good at it. He no longer has to look at any recipe. He has had every kind of mistake you can have. He has forgotten to grease the pan. He's forgotten to add flour. I get mad when he forgets to add chocolate chips, but it's been like an amazing total household immersion of his banana bread journey. So it's been really fun.
And then the other one, what is your other child making for breakfast?
My other son is no great cook, but we did tell him he had to learn how to make one dish. He is not the breakfast guy. He is mostly trying out all kinds of variations of homemade chicken nuggets. So it's like, we don't need to buy chicken nuggets. You can actually bread chicken breasts yourself and make them any shape you want. So that has been his general. And then he can make them and freeze them and reheat them for himself.
I like that.
So that's been quite a nice learning journey for him. He may never cook anything else, that kid, but that's what he's got going on.
All right. Let's talk more with our listeners in Minneapolis. Bonnie's on the phone. Good morning, Bonnie. What do you want to share with us about cooking?
Hi, good morning. Hi. So I just wanted to mention a meal exchange that I've been doing for almost 6 years with two other families. And so the way that it works is my partner and I have two kids, and we have these two other families that have two kids as well. And each week I'll decide a dish to make, and I make a large quantity of it, enough to feed the other families. And they each do the same. And then at some point early in the week, we'll package it up and exchange our meals with each other. And we just have a couple of parameters, like it has to be home cooked and we have to touch on, you know, most of the food groups. But what I love about it is with, you know, two kids and work and school and life, we're really busy, but I know that every week I have two home cooked meals in the fridge that I can just pull out when we need it.
And you all have been doing this for 6 years?
We've been doing it for 6 years. Yeah.
Wow.
And it's so great because for me, it like keeps me inspired. When I'm cooking, I feel like I'm really taking care of these other families. And so I feel inspired to cook food, and I feel really taken care of when I get their meals. My kids are exposed to a lot of different types of food that if it was just me cooking, they wouldn't be eating. And so it's been a really great, it's been a great way to like stay motivated to cook and to eat home cooked meals, but also just like build community and take care of each other.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That's Bonnie in Minneapolis. Another listener in Minneapolis we have on the line is Suzanne. And Suzanne, what do you want to tell us about what's happening in your kitchen?
Well, first, I'm team chicken thigh every day of the week.
All right.
And then I would just add that my wife and I are teachers. I'm so excited. I took today off because I have some appointments later. Mm-hmm. So I was hearing this show because I'm usually at work. And I'm the cook 100%. One of our first dates, I cooked and she said, if you cook, I'll do dishes. And for 15 years, that's been our setup. Mm. So we usually prep on the weekend and I make 10 lunches for us out of maybe two or three things. We don't call them leftovers, but we can because we don't care. But also we both lived internationally. And so we both lived in Thailand. She grew up in Indonesia and we lived in Mexico together. So one of the nice things about being in Minneapolis is we can get all those flavors here. Really be inspired to cook lots of different things. And my niece called me the best cooker in her life. And it's just been so much fun. And I think if I I worked in restaurants as a server and bartender from like 15 to 30 part time. And I was able to learn from the chefs there when it was slow. I worked in a Thai French fusion restaurant and I'd say, show me how you're doing that. And they would when it was slow. I sliced my finger and I got told not to be back there anymore. But so many of my dishes are inspired by things I used to eat in restaurants. And we just always have fun. I'm like the challah. It's like I'm stressed, busy, we work a lot, and I come home and cook a good meal, and it slows everything down. And it's, you know, we might make a pot of chili that lasts us 2 weeks or a curry that lasts us 2 weeks.
Well, good. You've got it sounds like the kitchen is still a happy place for you, Suzanne. That's great.
I wanted to give one last thing. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite, like, very quick. If you have no idea what to make, it will make everyone in your life happy. It's just a grilled cheese, but if you add thinly sliced apples or pears and a spicy jelly, you can add, like, bacon or ham, too, if you eat pork. Mm-hmm. It will feel like a deluxe gourmet grilled cheese, and it's super easy.
I like that. Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to make sure that we address one of the issues that I hear a lot from people is the fact that, you know, with kids being both, you know, elementary, high school, college kids, just kids being home more with distance learning and just everybody, you know, going back home, everyone's grocery bills have just really gone up because we're buying more food and cooking and eating more at home. So I want to make sure we talk about dishes that we can really stretch that will, you know, help us feed a lot of people or have a lot of leftovers that we might repurpose. And so any ideas about creating meals that will feed a lot of folks without costing a lot of money? James?
Yeah, the favorite dish every trimester for us is potstickers. And one of the things that I love so much about that dish is that you prepare a lot of the filling and then you can freeze that. And you can also, you can also preserve the wrappers, and then you can break that out anytime you're looking for something that's novel. Mm-hmm. We started doing that one when kids were cooking from home. So during the past, you know, three trimesters when we were all indoors at our own homes, kids would just join our class via Zoom. We'd deliver the groceries to them and we'd all cook together on Zoom. Oh, and so that was the first time we did the dumplings recipe when everybody was in their own kitchens. And so they got to sort of prove to themselves that they could do it there. But since then, dumplings and potstickers have become sort of a thing that I always keep the fillings for around just in case I want to make something that I can stretch, you know?
Kelly, any suggestions on, you know, meals that if you're on a tight budget that really work?
Yeah, I love that idea, James. Almost every culture in the world literally has its own sacred kind of dumpling. So you can stuff, and once you learn how to do that, right, you can be really free. But I like to think about how to take whatever is the most expensive ingredient that you're working with and really stretch it. So it's often meat. If you are not a vegetarian, you probably spend the most on meat. It's the most expensive thing. So maybe dishes that have just a little tiny bit of meat or that don't need that much in it, but you can really stretch that. For example, If you make chili, that's a really great example. Mm-hmm. You can use double the beans, which are much, much more cost effective, and half of the meat, and stretch it in that way. And you won't notice the difference because you'll still have some of that more expensive ingredient to bulk it up. So I try to generally think of strategies that go along those lines. And then the other thing is, breakfast for dinner is probably the single thing people in my house look the most forward to. And that is also, that's a meal that makes everybody really happy. And it's often just super cost effective. And that flip seems fun to people, but it's really inexpensive to make pancakes or to make waffles. And if you make them yourselves, you can feel very noble as opposed to buying them. It's just so much more cost effective.
And eggs, you can throw all kinds of things in eggs and make that, you know, a good meal. Okay. In our last few minutes, got to talk about the air fryer. My new best friend, the air fryer. Yes, I love it. But my daughter loves it too. And it's something that we, you know, we've been buying, you know, recipe books and trying to figure out, like, what else can we put in there? Let's talk about the air fryer and its popularity. Kelly?
I have to confess to you that I am not a gadget person. I have a small kitchen and I have to be really particular about what I bring into it. And I make bad choices. The last gadget I bought was a spiralizer. I don't know how many zoodles I thought I would be eating, but I dislike this gadget. I hate cleaning it. I almost never take it out. I do have a lot of friends and family who are swearing by their air fryer, so I'm watching it. And I'll tell you one awesome story. I have a student from Spain. She's an international student who came to North Carolina this year for the first time during quarantine. She wrote me about her air fryer and said her air fryer saved her mental health during quarantine. She couldn't go out. She couldn't get to know the local food system. American grocery stores felt very foreign to her. Her mother sent her an air fryer and said, "Why don't you experiment with this?" And she wrote this ode to her air fryer that was very persuasive to me. She said, "This was so fun to use and it got me involved in trying things. And it made me feel happy to go in the kitchen and experiment." So I think they're kind of great. You know, crispy as an adjective to describe any food is among the most best-selling adjectives on menus, studies have shown. So we want to make crispy foods. We really like them and we don't love deep frying. It's a huge hassle. It's incredibly not good for you, especially if you eat a lot of deep fried food. So in general, I think the air fryer is a good development. I have not tried one yet.
All right, James, are you team air fryer?
You have sold me on it. So
I like the texture. I like what it does to the texture of like both fresh vegetables as well as any meat I put in there. And, you know, I'm imagining the chicken thighs in there, which I have not done yet.
Okay, well, that would be the first thing I would do.
But do you find that teenagers, do you work with any tools like that or gadgets when you're teaching teenagers to cook, or do you keep it really simple?
We keep it pretty simple. One of the things we want to make sure that our students can do is take whatever we've done that day and bring it home with them. And of course, when we were all cooking from home, we just wanted to make sure that anything we were preparing food with was something that they'd be likely to have. So there were some times when we would sort of like deliver blenders to people's homes and things like that, because it's not just some, you know, there are some folks that just don't keep those around. Right. So,
well, our time is up for today, but I have learned so much. I want to, you know, revisit some of these documentaries the two of you mentioned. And Kelly, tell me again the documentary about the mushrooms that you...
Fantastic Fungi.
And then, James, you had a documentary, too, that you recommended. What is the name of it?
The Truffle Hunters.
All right. My weekend plans. I got it down. Thank you to our guests. Thank you for our listeners, too, with your suggestions about inspiring us to cook. Our guest today, Kelly Alexander, a food writer, editor, and professor of food studies in the Department of American Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And here in the Twin Cities, James Rohn, the program manager at the Project Success Cooking Institute in Minneapolis. Be safe, everyone. Have fun in the kitchen. We'll talk to you Monday morning at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.